Mic check, 1 2, 1 2.
One time. Good evening, pop pickers. You've stumbled upon another exciting episode of the Stardog Podcast. I'm Ralph.
I'm Andy, and we're here to celebrate two events, both uniquely linked. One is the recent cinematic tour de force that was the Nativity 2 with David, I used to be Doctor Who Tennant.
Yep.
Which was a pop culture grenade you will be thankful that we fell upon.
That's true.
And yes. In the wider picture, the year in cinema after Ralph... that's my peanut butter Kit Kat gone overboard.
Thank you, peanut butter Kit Kat.
It's doing what I felt like doing during the Nativity 2.
Indeed.
Also looking at the challenge I extended to Ralph last year was... to see 100 films.
Yeah, it's true. We have touched upon the 100 film challenge a few times. One of the many exciting story arcs which wind their way through this most eclectic of podcasts. The podcast about the items of pop culture that people don't talk about enough or don't look at them with quite the right viewpoint. So, to begin with Nativity 2. Now, we'll explain what Nativity 2 is, obviously, very shortly. But first of all, some background. You may recall a previous exciting story arc called Operation Manimal Silence. That's right, Operation Manimal Silence, which related to a television show called Manimal.
Which
terrible television show.
Officially the greatest television show of all time.
For those of you who may have missed those exciting episodes, Manimal was about a chap who turned into an animal by going, ah, like that, and turned into an animal and investigated crime. Now, you might think, that sounds quite good, but in fact, you'd be wrong.
Well, so, you would be if you were Ralph. If you're a right-thinking person, you would realise that this is awesome. I would say Manimal, played by the late, great Simon McCorkindale. But we're not going to rag on Manimal.
I need to explain. This is barely part of the prelude to the main course, shall we say. So, this exciting story arc apparently came to a head when... silent Stardog member Philip Ayres. What have you got to say for yourself, Philip? Thank you.
I thought he was going to say hello to Nick Roach.
No,
but he didn't.
Yes, so the Manimal DVD came through, and if you heard the episodes, the plot came to a head where we thought that what was going to happen is that Andy would watch the Manimal DVD, realise that his childhood memories had in fact failed him, that it was in fact terrible, and he would be crushed and left a broken man in front of us. Unfortunately, his blind love to Manimal persisted. Thus, as I hinted at the time, Operation Manimal Silence never ends. So, concurrent with this, another exciting story arc was that I had, as Mr. Turnbull had said, been challenged to watch 100 different films in the cinema in 2012. The rules of which were as follows. It had to be a feature film, a dramatic feature film, so no documentary features could be allowed. They could be viewed, but not part counted. The film had to be watched in its entirety, all the way through. I was not allowed to leave, or to go to the toilet, but I was not allowed to walk out of a film. So it was a whole film, including titles. So if the titles at the end of the film, I'd sit and watch the titles and then go away.
We would allow re-releases.
Re-releases were allowed as long as it was on a proper cinema screen. So not at an outdoor event, or just up on the screen, at a cinema where I had either paid for a cinema ticket to watch it properly projected, or use my Cineworld Unlimited card.
Other cinemas are available.
Other cinemas are available, and indeed other cinemas were utilised for this mighty quest. So I began to think, interesting, this is interesting, because Mr. Turnbull, along with some other friends, had said, oh Ralph, when you get to film 100, we'll go with you to see your 100th film.
To mark this event.
At which point I started to think, it needs to be something really terrible for Andy, because Manimal Silence didn't go the way it should have been.
Now, we're going to stop Ralph here, because after the film, I needed a morale-restoring pint.
It's true.
So we retired to a regular haunt, the Cow Pub, and Ralph said, at this point, don't try and pretend you're better than me. You would have done exactly the same thing. At which point, I said no, because having done the 100 films, which we'll come to because it wasn't all sunshine and lollipops for Ralph, is I would have liked to have ended it on a high.
Mm-hmm.
And just so I could say, you know what, there's been some good, there's been some lows, but I ended it on a winner.
Uh-huh.
The 100th of the winner.
Uh-huh.
And Ralph, kind of then had to go.
No, because I had looked at I looked at my frequency of films. I noticed the films started to dry up at the box office, and I knew then, having seen the trailer for Nativity 2, Danger in the Manger, that could possibly be one of the worst films of all time. So I thought, if I can just time it so that becomes the 100th film. And as it turned out, it looked like that was going to be the 100th film by natural means. It looked like it was actually just going to, just by happenstance, even lower part of. However, I realised it was going to fall one film short. So I did force myself to see a terrible film called Beasts of the Southern Wild, about which more later. So we got to the 100th film. Now, some context for Nativity 2, for non-British viewers. What type of film is it?
Nativity, well, I think probably better we start off with the first Nativity film,
yes.
Which was kind of a surprise hit. It was done partly to raise money for Children in Need, I believe,
yes.
As a charitable aim to it. And it involved a talent show for kids at a school that is kind of down on its luck. It's not particularly great. It's got a lot of child actors and popular celebs doing their bit for charity.
And it's got he who is now Bilbo Baggins.
Was in the first one,
Martin, what's his name?
Freeman.
That's the man. Also popular now due to the Sherlock television show.
Yes, it is.
And perhaps best of all for being in the Micro Men. It's the chap facing off against Sir Clive Sinclair.
Yes. Get said fucking Willie!
Indeed. Do find that programme. It's on YouTube.
Micro Men, it's amazing. Yeah. But anyway, we digress. So it was about a kid show where they record a song for a competition, and it's the kind of traditional kids all teaming up type thing.
Yeah.
But they're all very, very young, unlike where an American production would probably be veering towards the teen demographic. This is very much
older kids, sort of just PBS.
The
kids.
Horrible haunted man children of Step Up.
Yeah, yes.
And such like. So it did really well, and it was, by all accounts, judged on its own merits, a good film. I don't know, because I've never seen it.
No.
Having experienced Nativity 2, there is no force on this fucking earth or beyond will get me to watch that film.
There's no way we could tempt you.
No.
Even though apparently it's the good one.
No.
Oh, well, that's a shame.
That's like saying, but if you try eating this little bit of dog turd, apparently it won't taste
as
bad as the other one.
I mean, think about it. I mean, Star Wars Attack of the Clones is a film which is like diarrhea, but The Empire Strikes Back is really good, and that came before Attack of the Clones.
Your logic
so sometimes an earlier film in a series can bring joy to a later film, doesn't it?
I like to think, though, had I saw any of the new trilogy before, my soul would have been wounded so badly, I probably would be very reluctant to see that. And also, it has the advantage of, it's kind of science fiction-y, I like that. Mm-hmm. I could give 3/5 of a flying fuck about stuff about underprivileged schools wanting to record songs.
You just have no soul, no heart.
There is a lump of black coal which pulses with hate, which pushes the blood around me.
So this brings us on to Nativity 2, Danger in the Manger! Exclamation mark.
So
now, this is also in aid of children in need,
yep.
As the poster mentions, and excitingly for people in the UK, and perhaps some of our American chums, stars in the standing role, no less, David Iwo's Doctor Who Tennant.
Yes.
And he hasn't really had many actual starring top billing roles in feature films.
No.
Yeah. Couple of small wee things, but not really. I mean, so you think, hey, how bad can this be? He's good at comedy.
He is.
He can do light stuff. He can act with children.
He has a very good range.
He has a very good range. He's popular. He's got a good screen presence. So you think, how can this possibly be bad? And then the trailer came out, and that's when I vowed that I was going to see the terrible film, because it was going to come in at 100. And because it has David Iwo's Doctor Who Tennant in it, a part of me went, I need to see this. Also, from the trailer, it was like, you're just destroying your career, David.
In all fairness, I think he's happy he's been Doctor Who. He's married Doctor Who's
daughter. He's married Doctor Who's daughter. He's done stuff in the Royal Shakespeare Company.
He's been Hamlet.
I think he's alright.
He's voiced stuff for DreamWorks as well.
He even did a voice in the Clone Wars cartoon, you saw.
Yeah. I think he's comfortable, so, and I think it was more this was a charitable cause kind of twisted his arm. But anyway,
So off we went to see Nativity 2. Now, I'd like to point out, before Andy starts swearing and shouting,
I'm not going
to
swear, I'm going
to
give
two important things, just to re-emphasise. It's for children in need, that's right. every time you go and see this film, or perhaps purchase the DVD or legal download, you're helping underprivileged children, you know, get food, play, have a life. All good things, I think we can all agree. Secondly, when the pact was originally made and Mr. Turbo was threatened to see this film with me, he begged poverty. He said,
but well, Ralph, no, fairness,
let me finish. He said, but Ralph, he said, I am between positions at the moment. I have to watch my pennies. And I said, I understand, Andy. I'll buy your cinema ticket. And even though Mr. Turnbull is thankfully back in gainful employment, I kept that vow and I purchased a cinema ticket. That's right, he didn't have to pay a penny to watch this film. £7.83 well spent for the amusement that I got out of watching Andy squirm. At this point, I will go quiet and I will let you talk. On you go.
Okay, so I didn't see the trailer because I knew this film would be bad. Now,
why did you know it was going to be bad?
Because, to be honest, shows with kids in it generally boil my piss.
See?
I hate child actors with a passion.
Dear.
I've never enjoyed. It's a legacy of being a kid, and I think particularly my formative years in general, when they had one English language channel to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And during the tea time window where you were finished school, you'd done your before or after your homework, what have you, and there was limited TV opportunities for you, and there were shows that were not cartoons.
I see.
Bile was caused at an early age and it stuck with me. And just generally because the suspension of disbelief that these films ask you to maintain or to embark upon while still trying to sort of claim to be in sort of touch with some kind of reality is laughable, as we'll come to, particularly in this film. Unlike science fiction, where there's a massive suspension of disbelief asked, but they go for rather the reality and verisimilitude. Kids' films with kid actors in real-life situations don't go for verisimilitude. They go for reality and madness at the same time, and seldom does it work. So, we kick off with a narration from David Tennant talking about how he's moving. It's going to be his first Christmas. His wife's going to have a baby soon. He's looking forward to it. He's got a new position as a teacher.
Mm-hmm. All good.
He's doing it, and his dad's coming to stay. His dad happens to be
Winston Churchill from Doctor Who.
Ian McNeice.
Yep.
Doing a kind of one-note portrayal, which is a little bit of a shame because he is actually a very good actor, but doing a angry, stern father figure who doesn't think that his son has achieved enough. And the reason being is because he has a twin brother who overachieves and is the sort of proper alpha male, which we'll come to later.
We will.
So you go to he gets a position at the school. Now, it turns out that the Martin Freeman character has abandoned them, has obviously moved to a new school or a new position.
And going to America. There's a line about him going to America.
So the teacher's assistant, Mr. Poppy, I think.
Mr. Poppy, yes.
Who is a big, creepy man-child, if we're really
actually, through the narrative, actually genuinely creepy, unpleasant, not terribly nice man.
Very, very scary.
Yes.
You would not let your kids near him.
He's not in any way charming.
No.
No.
So he's been kind of teaching the kids, and every time there's a new teacher comes along to try and take over the class, he does something to derail it, because in his eyes the ideal teacher's left them and they've been abandoned and look after themselves.
Or whether your disbelief is falling out your pants.
Yes, so, and it turns out his aunt is the one that's the headmistress of the school, so when David Tennant arrives to take charge of the class, Mr. Poppy gets the kids to chase him in a kind of strange Lord of the Flies style pursuit and inevitable death had it not been intervened.
It was hilarious.
Now, see that laughter there?
Yeah.
That was missing from the entire time we were watching.
No, there was one bit where you tittered.
I chuckled.
You chuckled. There was one chuckle from me.
That's a chuckle, that's not a laugh.
Okay.
There's a difference.
Right.
Overselling it. So anyway, the kids want to win a school competition where, again, you go to and so I'll do a Christmas song with the possibility of being recorded, be Christmas number one, get 10,000 for your school.
In Wales.
Yes.
In a castle.
So, in the town that they're in, there's another sort of better school who are obviously in the same boat, want to get that prize, so they're auditioning and do it. David Tennant eventually gets in charge of the class. Mr. Poppy's undermining him the entire time. He's trying to stop all the madness. Basically, the upshot is, they're on a duck bus shaped like a duck because it's for a story question.
No, I have to say at this point, this actually was something that did give me joy. I did enjoy the boat shaped like a duck because, as we all know, the ducks are the secret rulers of the world.
I believe
I routinely feed ducks. I say hello to them.
I
ask them
can I just clarify?
They are my favourite animal.
Do you feed ducks in the red variety or the John Cullen variety?
Are you referring to feeding the ducks being a euphemism for masturbation, Andy?
I perhaps might be referring to such a thing, as popularised by friend of the show John Cullen at Auto Assembly 2011.
With regards to this particular use of the term feeding the ducks, I in fact refer to walking along the canal towards my full feathered friends, reaching into my pocket and pulling out some breadcrumbs and throwing them to the ducks. These breadcrumbs are always wholemeal, of course, because you must never use processed white rolls or bread with waterfowl, for it makes them sick.
Thank you for that informative.
Not a problem at all.
Informative dodging of the wanking question. So, David Tennant is kidnapped by Mr. Warren and
the
puppy, and they also manage to take a baby along with them for their stage show.
That's right.
So already at this point, you're like, no, sorry, you've.
Everything Mr. Poppy does basically just screams paedophile.
Yes.
I mean, seriously, he is just a screaming...
Schedule one offender.
He's just a screaming... Yes, one of them, yes.
But, so, this kind of happens, and... So at this point, you're saying, oh, this is ludicrous. Again, the whole suspension of disbelief is too much.
Yeah, there's also crazy comedy music. In the grand ship British comedy film tradition.
Yeah. So, but... Central to this competition is that one of the other entrants is David Tennant's twin brother.
Gasp.
Played by David Tennant. And a moment that brings you joy because he's wearing black suit with a fine black turtleneck. It is the closest David Tennant will ever get to be the master.
Pretty much. And it gives you brief hope that you're going to have a good Tennant and, versus an evil Tennant sort of thing.
And his choir are basically like the Hitler Youth. He's very aggressive in terms of...
Inhale success.
Exhale, was it exhale?
Greatness or something.
No, because it's getting rid of something.
Yeah, oh.
Your success.
I don't know.
Exhale, but it's either exhale, failure, or disappointment.
Something like that, yeah.
And it turns out he's got this ability, he's got this from his dad, made them hold their breath for a while when they were learning to swim, because it would make them better, apparently.
Yes.
So he's, and the choir, the male choir he's got are all Hitler Youthy in the finest tradition. They do look like young Nazis.
It's true.
So,
and he is a Nazi leader.
Yes, it's amazing. That's the only bit that you just kind of go, some charm. Then they're off the screen. Then there's the traipsing. The bus, the duck bus breaks down because it's got no petrol.
Then it goes into the water.
But no, it goes into the water before they lose petrol.
Of course, sorry.
They go across the lake.
It's such a complex narrative.
They end up finding a donkey in the middle of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
To get to the castle, they end up whitewater rafting, using a convenient raft and sort of life jackets and helmets, all suitable for the same size for kids, and conspicuously enough for all of them.
It's true.
The donkey sadly is left behind. However, he walks up later.
I did giggle.
That was the chuckle moment.
That was the chuckle.
Because he said, "The donkey can fly!" In that fucking horrible, annoying voice he did.
So there's a lot of CBBC style acting.
Oh, it's awful. So they eventually get to the castle where it's there. Evil Tennant has seen one of the other acts and is stealing bits from them so he can win because he's a shady kipper.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, because all these kids have vanished, the school are now searching frantically for them. The kids get trapped on a cliff face. One of them is stuck. But he gets saved by David Tennant's wife, a search and rescue helicopter. As this is going on, you have the rehearsals for the show.
Yes.
So you get some of the song acts and you're like, okay, fine, get this out of the fucking way very quickly.
Also, at this point, Jessica Hines from Spaced, or more importantly, the Doctor Who episodes, The Family of Blood and Human Nature, which also starred David Tennant.
And The End of Time Part 2.
It's a slightly different character. Who's the descendant of that character?
Oh, she's still in it.
Oh.
Just merely pointing
out. Get back to your synopsis.
Yeah. So anyway, you see the acts kind of going on. You think, thank fuck, they're cutting out, they're interspersing the music, so we'll get a fairly good wrap-up at the end, fairly pacey.
No.
Oh, fuck no. Because there's even more songs that come go through. evil David Tennant meets good David Tennant, but through the miracles of locked off shots, they never actually share a stage exactly at the same time.
Indeed.
Probably to stop lots of Who fanboys and fangirls writing unpleasant
you
stories.
You only get one actual shot of both of them on the screen at the same time at the very end.
Yes. When they reconcile after the...
Yes.
Because it ends up that they win the competition, but they're leaving because David Tennant's dad is a pop on, and David Tennant has finally learned to kind of embrace impulsive and be kind of in touch with his emotional side and stand up for himself a little bit. So he has a go at his dad and tells him basically a GTF. Then his wife goes into labour, so they find a barn and have twins.
Yes.
And it ends with his dad being proud of him, his brother and him sort of reconciling a little bit,
mm-hmm.
And they're all of them having fun in the manger.
In their actual manger, yes. So, Andy, haven't completed your thrilling synopsis of the movie, doesn't sound that bad. I mean, you've exclaimed that you think it's the worst film you've ever seen. Just listening from that, I think people will be shaking their heads and going, what's the problem here? You even sound quite calm and restrained. Even though during the film, at one point you took your glasses off because you couldn't bear to look at what you were saying.
It's true.
Many a time pulled the hood over your head.
I almost pulled the hood over once.
You actually did it three times. Three times.
No, No.
Three times. No. The glasses came off once. The hood was thrice.
No, the hood only went over my eyes once.
Over your ears. Ears. It was going over your ears. It looked like you were trying to block out the existence.
No, I was just adjusting it.
You may deny it, but I know it's true.
No, you don't.
So, I do. So, get on with it.
You interrupted me.
No, I know. I don't understand why you're so upset by this film. You don't seem too upset. What's the problem? What's wrong with it?
Days of Meld. I've told you that the points are, if you've got a successful formula, why do the old go on tour thing? It never fucking works. Also, again, the suspension of disbelief is stupid to the point of, no, he'd be arrested. He'd be arrested. He'd be arrested.
What, for stealing all the children?
Yes.
And the thing is, what actually makes it worse is the David Tennant character himself points out that very fact to you many times. So you can't even suspend your disbelief and go, ah, it's the adventure, it's the magic, it's the kids' film. It's like, no,
and
he keeps saying we're going to get in trouble, we stole all these children.
And even when David Tennant points out, he still goes along with them. He didn't have to whitewater raft, he could have put the foot down and said, no, you could be better.
It's true, but you notice he sort of changes his way after they all go into the cave, which is a bit like the cave from
the
end of time.
But first.
Yeah, which is like we're all...
Well, that's my point.
I know, but that's when he starts us off, because he goes into the cave, which is just like the cave from the end of time, where the Doctor communes with the Ood. So maybe he was going in there and communing with the Ood, from the Ood sphere.
The rafting happened before the cave, and he went along with it.
Yes.
Which is a huge thing. That's an easy point for me to go, no, stop.
Mm-hmm.
It's just... It was awful. Tennant in turtleneck brought brief joy.
Mm-hmm.
The donkey, when it suddenly reappeared, brought a chuckle.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of it was awful. However, thankfully my tolerance of shit is such that I didn't suffer the most on that trip. For we speak of friend of the podcast, Mr. Merrifield.
Who volunteered the services.
Because
honestly.
He just wanted to watch me suffer.
That's true.
And it backfired on him rather spectacularly. Whereas my pain was all at the start and it kind of deadened and I got able to...
Mm-hmm.
Boost getting away through the film, he became angrier and angrier.
True.
Also, to the woman who was in the cinema, who's a grown up, and who was laughing at some of it, not in a this is so shit, this is laughable, but in a I'm finding this genuinely amusing, seek help.
There was also a lady at the back that was laughing quite a bit.
They did
have a child, but they were also laughing. So some people were really enjoying that film.
And there was a couple who had went. And boyfriend and girlfriend, as they're walking past, girlfriend goes, you're never fucking picking a film at the cinema again. Bravo, madam.
But there was also the splendid elderly couple. When they shuffled into the cinema, the gentleman let out the largest burp of hair in quite some time.
Unrestrained and publicly
proud
of it.
He didn't even stop, he went, off he went.
I think that was the biggest laugh we had during the film.
It actually was the biggest laugh. Except, the thing is, I had constant amusement all the way through. I thoroughly enjoyed my cinematic experience. Not because of the film. The film was undeniably horse manure. In fact, I've eaten horse manure probably at some point, and it tasted better.
Really?
I probably have. Who knows? I drink occasionally.
Ralph's secret fetish.
In fact, it's not even the worst film I've seen this year in the cinema. I have seen films which are more terrible than that. But because you were sort of screaming in terror the whole time, I took joy from your pain.
It is the worst film I've seen this year. It is the worst film I've ever seen.
Is it? No, hang on. I thought the worst film we'd ever seen in the cinema was a film called The Bruce.
No, I didn't see it at cinema. Ah. That was a Sky Movies.
Oh, I see. I'll take that back then.
And The Bruce has to be in a special category of its own, filmed as it was on a budget of Three Fists and Fuck All and Pocketland.
I see.
But no, so that was Ralph chose that to cap off The 100. Now,
it's true.
Again, as I said, I would have picked something better. Now, I know initially they'd planned on having A Muppet Christmas Carol being released.
Which
at
was
time
advertised in the
and
cinema.
And then it was ceremoniously vanished.
Vanished, yeah. As happens quite a lot in Cineworld, actually. They often will advertise films with trailers, and often you'll see posters up, and they'll say, opens on Friday, opens on Monday, opens on, and then they just take the posters.
Because
away.
That would have been my pick for a 100 film.
No, I still would have finagled it in some way, that Activity 2 would be 100. So there you go.
No, I'm pointing at my pick.
Yeah, I know, but I'm the better man. I'm the better man.
No, you're not.
So
we're going to go on to kind of Ralph's 100 now. A lot of them I went through now. What I think what we'll do is, rather than go through it in any particular order, as we kind of started off at the, and let's, we don't try and moan too much on this podcast, we like to intersperse it. So I think
true.
Let's start where we are at the moment. Yes. Wallowing in the sewer.
Wallowing
sewer
at number 97 on my list of 100.
Let's talk about the dregs, and we'll move our way up to some of the better ones.
Uh-huh.
And then I'll have a pop at you for some of the notable omissions from your list.
I see.
And other strange reviews.
Yes. So,
Ralph, you said this wasn't the worst film.
It's not, no. The worst one was Cosmopolis.
But I believe starring him as Twilight, and the director was David Cronenberg of Scanners, Videodrome,
it's
Crash, and Existence.
It's true, David Cronenberg has forgotten how to make entertaining films. He made two bad films this year. The other one was the film with Mr. Fassbender, where he played Jung, a Freudian Jung film, and a film the name of which I cannot remember right now and cannot find on my list, which I have right in front of me. A Dangerous Method, that was it. That wasn't really good either. Cosmopolis is fucking terrible, right? Let me explain to you the premise of Cosmopolis. You've got the dude out of Twilight, Robert Pattinson. Now, Robert Pattinson is blameless in this film, completely blameless, because...
Unlike Twilight.
Because it would not matter which actor you put in this role. It's an unplayable role. It's impossible for any actor at all. So I don't blame him. And he's an executive type chap. And he gets in a big limo. And the limo goes around the city. Right? And as he goes around the city, which clearly starts as a blue screen, an obviously fake blue screen, and then becomes more and more real as the film goes on. Ooh. Various characters come in and out of the limo to interact with them, to show you exciting facets of today's society and how it all works. And they're all shit. They're just kooky characters who have no fucking personality, who are just exaggerated to the nines, so broadly played, that they have no relation to reality. And it's just like having... It's like... Let me explain. The experience of Cosmopolis is he goes around in his endless fucking limo doing fuck all and not doing to a conclusion which makes no fucking sense at all. It's like, imagine if Yogi Bear was naked. Imagine if Yogi Bear was covered in honey and Yogi Bear was coming up to you covered in honey and he was saying, lick me all over now. See the feeling of revulsion you have when you're in the centre of your being just now. That's nothing compared to the horror of Cosmopolis. Cosmopolis is like all the jam in the world being taken away, because that would be a miserable thing. People wouldn't be happy if all the jam went away. Even people who don't like jam would say, hang on a second, that at least looks nice in a jar on a supermarket shelf. Jam's not so bad. Also, it's a kind of funny word to say. Jam! Woo! It's a kind of happy, bouncy word. That's what Cosmopolis does to the world. It is the single shittest piece of celluloid I've ever seen. I cannot even fully articulate other than just stream invectives, because it just hurts me to even think about it. There will never be a film worse in the cinema than Cosmopolis. Never. Never. It's impossible. They could be Nativity 15, and that will be a shining gold to the turned out that is Cosmopolis. I would rather watch Star Wars Revenge of the Sith on a loop for 100 days non-stop while being pumped full of chemicals to keep me awake than to even see a single frame of Cosmopolis again. Cronenberg directed The Fucking Fly. He used to have talent. He has no talent. His talent pooped in a bag and was taken away in a poop bag to get put in the bin, all the poop bag from Dog School, except that his poop bag would be a different colour because he's not as good enough to be in the poop bin with the rest of them. I don't even know what that means.
Neither do I. So we'll give Ralph a moment to get a dry frog pill, because what we're going to do is we're... Now, that was a live-action film.
Oh, it was a live-action film.
So, just above Nativity 2, we have arguably the biggest crime against animation.
We've talked about it before.
It's Top Cat, which, again, is Ralph rate higher than Nativity 2, as do I. But it was bad.
Yeah, that was
bad. And please do not watch it.
No.
So, I'm kind of going to move up a little bit.
Yes.
Now, we kind of talked about a couple of films in here, so we're not going to gloss over.
Yeah, yeah.
Prometheus, we've ranted about a bit.
Yeah.
But what we're going to do is we're going to go to probably the most contentious on the list.
Oh, yeah, I think I know what you're heading for.
We're not talking about Journey to the Mysterious Island, because I love The Rock. I will concede, having saw the trailer for that, that would be a turd. I speak, of course, of The Muppets, which you have at number 77.
I have The Muppets number 77 because it's not a good film.
Now, I'd like to preface this with, I watched this, this is one of the three films this year that I watched, and, well, may not be the most in-depth, it certainly isn't the best Muppet film,
no.
And I wouldn't ever accept that. I watched that film, within 3 seconds I had a grin on my face, which didn't leave me for the entire time. One of only three films that I had this effect on. Two of which are on this list. One has been omitted for, how shall we say, political reasons.
Yes.
Which we'll come to in a little bit.
I don't know what that is.
What are you doing? You'll remember in a wee minute. But we won't spoil the listeners yet. But The Muppets, why? Defend yourself!
You know, when I described the plot of The Muppets film to people at work, who asked me how my viewing experience went, because they know that I love The Muppets dearly.
That's
all they're thinking people do. And I described the experience of the Muppets movie to them. And one of my colleagues wrinkled her nose in disgust and went, "Ew, the recession Muppets. Why would anyone want to watch that?" And that's it in a nutshell. It's dour, it's depressing. I suffer from the Ghostbusters 2 effect. Let me explain the Ghostbusters 2 effect to you right now.
I've seen Ghostbusters.
But you don't know what the Ghostbusters 2 effect is. I'm about to explain it. Now, Ghostbusters 2, while it has some enjoyable elements and I've warmed to it a bit over the years, hurt young Ralph very bitterly at the age of 10 in the way that few films have ever hurt Ralph. Because young Ralph loved Ghostbusters. He really enjoyed the film. He enjoyed the real Ghostbusters cartoon. He enjoyed the Marvel UK comic. He enjoyed some of the toys. Though he never got an Ecto-1 or the Firehouse. He's not at all bitter about that to this very day. But he enjoyed these things, and he thought, fantastic, a new film with the Ghostbusters. Then he went to see the Ghostbusters, and within 5 minutes his soul was crushed. Oh look, the Ghostbusters aren't actually the Ghostbusters anymore. Oh look, they don't have their business anymore. Oh look, they're all out of work. Oh look, no one believes them. And it's just this crushing cloud of depression that comes down, because I wanted to go and see a film about the Ghostbusters, not let's do the same plot again about them finding what it's like to be a Ghostbuster, and it was depressing, and it was doing it dampened my mood. And even though I've warmed to the first half of that film, I still find it hard to enjoy it, because it's like, ugh. And then the same film with The Muppets. You go with The Muppets, you go, yes, The Muppets on the big screen again, hooray. Oh look, The Muppets studio has been closed down. Oh look, The Muppets are all down on their heels. Oh look, they're all depressed, they're sad, they're angry, they're everywhere. And oh look, I now know, with crushing inevitability, looking at my imaginary watch, we're not actually going to get the Muppets doing the Muppets thing, probably for at least an hour, because we have to get them all together. Okay, this is really getting me down. What's going to be there to entertain me while this goes on? This air of melancholy and loneliness and sadness that pervades the screen. Musical numbers. Ralph likes a good musical number. While he doesn't like musicals, he likes musical numbers, which is a distinction. Unfortunately, they were all shit. They were badly timed, badly choreographed. The director had this weird thing of just not being able to frame things properly. Many scenes were suddenly cut off in a mid-sentence and a mid-word, and you're just going, what's going on? And what was worse is that, oh look, this film isn't actually about the Muppets. It's about this random one called Walter that we've just made up and put, you will love Walter. No, I went to see the Muppets, not this random one. If you're just in as an extra dude, that's fine. Oh wait, you're the main character. Whoop-dee-fucking-do. Whoop-dee-fuck-you-up their fucking arse. That's what it was like watching the Muppets. It was like being bummed when you don't want to be bummed. And that's all I've got to say about that film.
I, of course, I can concede your point a little bit in terms of yes, but it was more a getting the band back together picture. I can see part of your comparison with Ghostbusters 2. Ghostbusters 2 pissed me off, not because they'd kind of broken up, because you can see that happening, but the whole nobody believes you thing pissed me off. Still does, because that's a disbelief. The Muppets thing was just about, it's old vaudeville, it was old in the 70s, it's kind of passed people by, or it seems to have passed people by, but people are still looking for it. So no, I think The Muppets was a much better film than you gave it credit for with your Ghostbusters 2 blinkers on.
Mm-hmm.
So, Marvel superheroes didn't get much joy from you this year.
They didn't, no. No, they didn't. Which one?
Well, both, because they're both consecutive, remember.
I see, right.
You have The Amazing Spider-Man and Marvel Avengers Assemble.
Which one would you like me to discuss?
Give an overview of both rather than Dead, because I think we've touched on them anyway a little bit.
I found them both to be very boring. It's pompous, up their own bum, lacking in joy or charm, too self-important, far too long, ponderous franchise, bore fest.
In fact, it'd be fair to say that superhero films got a bit of kicking from you, because The Dark Knight Rises was...
The Dark Knight Rises is also a very poor piece of cinema. I would say, I'll make a distinction here. I would say that the Marvel Avengers Assemble and The Dark Knight Rises, I thought were poor films, but well-intentioned poor films. I thought they were both made by people whose work I've very much enjoyed in the past and will probably almost certainly enjoy in the future. And probably, I got the impression, were actually trying to make properly good films, and I think they were both let down by poor scripts, generally, and some very bad premises. Unfortunately, The Amazing Spider-Man, despite a very good performance from Andrew Garfield, and the loveliness that is Emma Stone's legs.
And the rest of Emma Stone.
I know, but particularly the legs. Was dreadful, utterly dreadful. It was badly directed, badly written, ponderous, overly long, boring, utterly boring. And I think I'm done with Spider-Man films now. I've seen Spider-Man 1 and 2, I didn't like them. I've not seen 3. I've seen Amazing Spider-Man, I think I'm kind of done with them. I don't need to watch anymore.
Until you've seen Spider-Man 3, you're not done with them. And I have them on Blu-ray.
No, I think I know that Spider-Man films are just not for me. I will stick with reading the comics where Spider-Man wisecracked before he was rebooted and turned into a completely different character. Thank you, Marvel.
So, what we do is, now, we had mentioned that...
See, I just brought forth some bile again.
Yeah. You seem to be suffering more than me at this point in time. So we've talked about some of the re-releases because...
Yes.
Rather curiously, is that there isn't a re-release in the bottom 50.
It's true.
The lowest place is Hobson's Choice.
Which was a re-release of a film I hadn't seen.
I'd never heard of it. I saw it in English.
No, it's people don't know Hobson's Choice. It's 1950-something.
Charles Lawton and John Mills are the two titular leads.
Charles Lawton owns a shop which sells shoes.
It's Hobson.
Post-war England, post-Second World War England. It's in glorious black and white, it's 4x3, it was a fully remastered print paid for by the BFI. But I never heard of this film, I just went along randomly because the local cinema was doing a season of re-releases of old British films every Tuesday for a month or so. And I thought, John Mills, I like John Mills. So Charles Lawton is the overbearing owner of the shoe shop. John Mills works in the basement making shoes.
Well, he's the repairman, I think.
He's a repairman, yeah, but he also wants to make the shoes. And basically, one of Charles Lawton's daughters decides that she's had it with the being treated as a woman and her place is just to get married and all sorts of stuff. And that she's just as good as any man, so goes out and forms her own business, takes John Mills under her wing, says she's going to marry him and all sorts of business. And you have a sort of comedy of errors of the time. It is very dated. I think if you don't know anything about England of the period, you'd be scratching your head a wee bit, to be honest. And even then, you have to sort of, you know, distance yourself a wee bit. And it is very much a play, this film. But I thought we enjoyed it. I thought it was a good wee film. And it was great. And it was nice as well, because I think it's a good thing that older films occasionally get a periodic re-release in cinemas. And not just the big blockbusters or films I've seen before that I remember fondly, sometimes you go, oh, there's a film that's on. Like, see, for instance, there's a re-release of Lawrence of Arabia, which keeps jumping from cinema to cinema and never seems to be on a day where I can go. But I think it's still doing its rounds and I hope to catch it, because I've never seen it all the way through and I'd like to see it in the cinema. So that was quite a good wee film. I enjoyed that. That was number 45.
That's true.
Yeah.
I happened to be with Ralph for several of these just through various adventures in Jaipuri. So we're going to go up a little bit.
Yes.
So, sequels.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was not a huge amount of sequels in there that did well in your eyes. Apart from just outside the top 10,
mm-hmm.
The Expendables 2.
The Expendables 2 is fantastic.
This was the second of my grin at the start, stop grinning when the film ends.
The Expendables 2 is joy in cinematic form. If you think of it, if you're a child of the 80s and watched or enjoy the action films of the 80s, yes. And sort of early to mid 90s at the latest, The Expendables 2 is the film for you. The Expendables was the film I was at a couple of years ago, and the gimmick of it, and it was a gimmick, was that Sylvester Stallone and various other action stars of that period would unite to fight
Shady Kippers,
as also known as Eric Roberts, who was also an action film star.
He also had leading the charge for the current generation of action stars. It's undoubtedly probably the bankable box office star that is the Staith.
It's true.
Who should be James Bond one day?
According to my father, he should be James Bond.
And
yes.
Batman.
No, I don't agree with that.
Jason Statham as Batman.
That's too obvious.
Is it too epic?
Jason Statham is super tight. That makes more sense. Anyway. Yes. So The Expendables was a highly enjoyable film. It's a good film to sit and watch in company with a few beers and it's endlessly rewatchable. However, The Expendables 2 is better. By, I would say, quite a country mile. For several reasons. First of all, it gives Bruce Willis and Arnold Schwarzenegger proper roles, as in they have catchphrases, shitty dialogue, and shoot lots of people until they die.
And there is Bruce also
only had a wee cameo in the first one.
Also, more Dolph.
Far more Dolph Lundgren in the second film than the first. For plot reasons, he was not in the first one.
However,
too much.
But the first film, he stole it in very early on. He goes, "Where are you off to?" "I'm off to hang a pirate." And lo, he did
hang
a smelly
pirate. That's right. Whereas in Expendables 2, he is in it all the way through and is actually the best thing in it.
To be honest, Jet Li gets kind of pushed to the sidelines, I think, probably
he's only in it for about 5 minutes at the start.
But the rest of the cast actually get more. Terry Crews, the big African American guy,
he's very good.
He's very funny. Randy Couture, former UFC fighter, is mm-hmm. very good as well. It has just it's a good.
Chuck Norris appears.
Yes, Chuck Norris appears and wanders off. The villain is Jean-Claude Van Damme.
And that's not too much of a spoiler. I won't say who he does it to and why. But you know it's a good film when Jean-Claude Van Damme comes on and kickboxes someone to death with one kick.
Roundhouse kick.
Indeed. And it's utterly joyous. It's great. It's brilliant. I can't wait to see it again.
And number three just needs to get Michael Dudikoff of American Ninja and Steven Seagal just to tick off the list.
And at that point, I think the joke is done. We know inevitably there will be a straight to DVD Expendables 4 starring
whoever
is available from
Mark Dacascos.
Oh, good times. Good
it
time.
Will be Mark. If you need a sequel and you don't have your leading man anymore, Mark Dacascos. He was a crow.
It's true. He was. The crow is coming back, you know.
I know. Remember, he was a crow, but he was not the worst crow. There was a worst crow.
That's true.
Do you know who I speak of?
Are you speaking of the Edmund Furlong?
I am speaking of the Furlong crow.
Oh dear, poor Eddie Furlong. Yeah. Well, you'll always have Terminator 2, I suppose.
And American History X.
Which I haven't seen. Shocking revelation.
Pause. You have. It's got Sisko in it.
I know it's got Sisko in it, I'm just not.
But and he's bald and mental.
I know.
Imagine if Sisko taught you at school. This is the film.
I know, but I just haven't had.
It's got Ed Norton.
I haven't had.
And it has the most unpleasant sound effect in cinema history.
I haven't had the opportunity to see it yet. There's many films out there. I've seen 100 alone in the cinema this year. I can't see them all.
American History X in about fucking years.
I know, but
It has her from Voyager in as well, Kes.
Oh.
In a supporting role.
Jennifer Leigh.
Yes, I can never remember her name.
That's her name. So, I don't think you can remember her name either.
But, so that was the best placed sequel.
Yes.
Of a, that wasn't a re-release.
Yes.
Because the top ten, or sorry, the sort of the top half is quite re-release friendly.
Yes. As it turned out. Keep going.
I'm about to.
Fill this dead air.
No. I was giving you a pause to share some information.
I mean, well, let's look at Jaws, right? Right. There's a good one, talking about re-releases, right? Jaws, I put at number 7. Now, Jaws for me, it was always an enjoyable film, but it was never a scary film, or even even what I would say, a classic film. It was just a good film I liked, you know? That's what it was. So a good film that I liked, and that's pretty much all I thought about, really. And then it was re-released for a couple of weeks early in the year, and a brand spanking new restored print. Because one of the strategies for re-releases that seems to have come in is that oftentimes distributors seem to put out a film for usually 1 or 2 weeks as basically a loss leading advert for the Blu-ray. So basically you're getting the print that's used on the Blu-ray. And to me this doesn't make me go and think, oh, I'll go and buy the Blu-ray. It just makes me go, get me to a cinema so I can watch a really good remastered version of this on the big screen. So Jaws was on, I had a day off work, I thought I could pull along to see Jaws. Again, not really expecting much other than, nice couple of years. And it was a complete revelation seeing it in the cinema. It was like watching an entirely different film from watching it on TV. Bearing in mind, I was used to grainy 4x3 pan and scan prints as well. But when you see it on the big screen, the way it's framed suddenly becomes obvious. The shark is everywhere. You see all, when the cinema screen is expanded into your vision, you find yourself looking to see where the shark is, and suddenly you get the point of it. It also was much funnier on the big screen, it's better directed, and I actually jumped at several points, like out of my chair, and was actually properly gripping my seat and frightened by the end. And that's a film I've probably seen probably about a dozen times.
Yeah, because you still watch it on TV.
Obviously on television. So even if not a dozen times all the way through, you always saw bits of it, or caught bits of it. And it was fantastic, and I would say, if Jaws gets re-released again, which I hope it does, Pay the money. Go see it on a cinema screen. It's really well worth it. And actually, it turned out to be one of my best cinema experiences of the year. Probably one of the best cinema experiences I've had in a few years was, of all things, watching Jaws. And the only disappointment was that it was quite reasonably advertised. A lot of re-releases just seem to just sneak out. But this was properly advertised and was given a full 2-week run. And I went straight after work on opening day, tea time, Friday. And you think, Jaws, there'll be a reasonable wee crowd for this. 5 of us. In quite a large theatre.
Friday or something, pub night.
Yeah.
So.
Yes.
You're not very big on horror.
Not a huge one for horror.
Which is, unlike myself, who if there's a franchise, I've seen most of it, if not all.
I was sometimes like a film that happens to be a horror, but the genre itself is not one I'll actively seek out.
So it's quite a surprise to see. I wouldn't say Paranorman at number 2 is really horror, it just has a homage to a lot of horror.
Yes, yeah, it's not a horror film.
But you have The Woman in Black.
The Woman in Black, yes, it was very good. This was the one with Harry Potter in it, where Harry Potter goes to a sinister haunted house, where it's England about 80 years ago, is it after? I think it's between the wars. Between the wars, it's a single, and Harry Potter is a lawyer who's not doing very well. He's a young widow, a young widower, rather. His wife has died, he's got a young child, so he's basically given one last chance by his employer to go off and sort out the affairs of an old house, and basically make it ready to be sold, otherwise he's out in his ear. So he has to go and do the job, and he goes there, and sure enough, meets the locals. Like, oh, don't you be going there, be haunted, don't you know? Because that's the way everyone talks in the countryside. So he goes off to investigate, and without spoiling it, there is a mysterious woman in black figure who apparently seen and has been seen. And when she appears, usually children will die in horrible circumstances. There's nothing gory or graphic on screen, it's all suggestion, and it's fantastic. And it was I shit my pants at many a time through it, because what works is sound effects. Almost the whole film is just on the shadows, lights and sound effects. There's no blood spurting across the screen, There's no gory entrails, there's no higgledy-piggledy coming at people's bodies, there's no type dialogue. It's just that, and there's a whole section for about 20 minutes in the middle. It's just Harry Potter walking around this house, hearing noises. And at one point I did literally jump out of my seat and then felt that affiliation whole moment saw me. And it's fantastic because it's made by Hammer, the resurgent Hammer. And generally when it comes to horror, as I said, although I'm not a huge horror fan, I will generally enjoy most of Hammer's output of olden days, because even when they had gore, they usually had a bit of class to them and a bit of style to them, or good acting and good films. So I love the Woman in Black, and I've recommended it to people who don't usually watch horror films, and anyone I've suggested to go and see it has enjoyed it. So yes, and Harry Potter is actually a good actor. There's Mr. Radcliffe, he can actually act.
So we'll go to the number one film for you.
That was The Artist. Now, 2 points about The Artist. The Artist, unfortunately, has become massively overhyped. The Artist was a film I saw when it was just a random film to go and see.
Quite early on, I think.
When it was, I'd heard about it and seen a couple of trailers, and I just thought, oh, it's a silent film, black and white, 4x3. Not the kind of film I would usually go and see, because while I admire and have an interest in a lot of early films, the techniques and the way they were made and stuff, I usually find it impossible to sit through a silent film all the way. I can never watch it all the way through. Because I'm very much into sound, I find it very hard to concentrate on the whole thing. So I thought, I can't go and see it, whatever. And it was utterly charming. It's one of the best films I've ever seen in the cinema, because it's just lovely. It's one of those very rare films where you come out of it and you feel better about life. You just go, life is good. It's one of the best cinematic dogs ever. During the year of the silent films, an actor who's been very popular. Even the thing is, to tell you the plot makes it sound pish, but the plot is that he's the silent film star, his star's going down, his talkies are coming in, he gets in tow with this woman whose star starts to go up because she can sing very well and all that kind of business, so, you know, still star is born, type thing. The plot, actually, to describe it, sounds pish. It's the way it's done that makes it magical. Unfortunately, what's happened with The Artist is that as it was doing the rounds in the cinema, it began to generate critical heat, began to actually make a bit of money, and became rather overhyped, particularly when it was the Oscars. And a lot of people have now known who saw it because of the hype, hated it because they thought they were getting something else. If you just go in and just expect a nice, charming story, that's it. If you go in expecting best film ever, Oscar winner, amazing stuff, you will be very disappointed. So just go and see it. But I would love it. I probably will buy the DVD at some point, because I thought it was really, really lovely, charming film.
I've yet to see it, but I don't have Ralph's problem with silent film. I still think two of the best films that we've seen in cinema were Metropolis and Nosferatu. And M's quite good with Peter Lorre as well.
Yeah, so again, I've only ever been able to watch bits of those films. I've never been able to sit them through them all the way through.
So, kind of, we'll publish the full list of the 100, and what I should preface is, Ralph's list is not about what is best, it's about what he's enjoyed more.
Yeah, it's just...
So, there are films that he's actively said, looking back, he would rate higher.
Yeah, or some that I would rate lower, because although I enjoy them, they didn't stay high in mind. An example, for instance, at 15 I've got Chronicle, which was one of those very rare instances of a found footage film that I actually enjoyed. And I thought it was really good and very clever, and to be honest, the best superhero movie of the year. Far, far better than any of the Batman or Marvel films by a country mile. But while I enjoyed it, it's a once watch only. I wouldn't rate it that high, I'd drop that down. And then we've got, let's see, an example of when it would go up. Would be, let's have a look here. There. Argo, actually, funnily enough, at 36, which I enjoyed at the time. Didn't think it was amazing, but the more I thought about it, the more I think, that was actually quite a good film. Same with A Royal Affair, in Congolese Affair, the Dutch film. Another film that I enjoyed at the time, but has really stayed in my memory quite a bit, so I'd rate that one higher. And then you've got strange films like Killer Joe, down at 57. Killer Joe is now known for the chicken scene. I saw Killer Joe before I was aware there was a chicken scene, because I saw it on opening night, and it was before people's reactions got out. So I had no idea the last third of the film was going to be some of the most depraved and horrible things I'd ever seen. And that's all. But I still actually don't know if I enjoyed the film or not. I can't tell you if I enjoyed it. It was interesting, it was well acted, it wasn't bad. But I can't tell you if I liked it. So it's actually impossible to rate. The same would actually be more recently with The Master, which I'm down at 47 there, which is the film that is not at all about L. Ron Hubbard of Scientology in any way whatsoever. Not honest, it definitely isn't. Really, it's not. Don't sue us. Again, I just don't know how I feel about it.
Much like The Spirit.
It's what we call The Spirit Effect. Frank Maybe Miller's, you should explain The Spirit Effect.
Frank Miller's take on The Spirit, which... The Spirit is a character created by Will Eisner, arguably, probably, Kirby and Lee aside, the most inventive, and probably actually more, in terms of the craft and technique, outstrips both of them. The if you've read any comic of any stripe, you have him to thank, because most of the techniques he developed, innovated or refined. The man was a genius. Now, he created the Spirit for newspapers as an answer to superheroes. And basically, a dude in a blue mask who fought crime and was very human. And Frank Miller was a friend of his, and there was always talks about getting a film version of it. And it was kind of, Eisner tacitly said, I'd let Frank do it.
Mm-hmm.
This is Frank Miller, who has done Batman The Dark Knight Returns,
yeah.
Electro Lives Again, Daredevil mm-hmm. Born Again, 300,
yeah.
Holy Terror. Horse, horse, horse. You get the yeah. idea. But so The Spirit was inventively shot, gorgeous looking, but it hypes up the hard-boiled aspects of the Spirit character, which many people said, but that's not The Spirit. And it's like, no, go back and read the material. It is there.
Mm-hmm.
But Miller's over yes. us kind of yeah. focused on that. But it's quite outlandish that you have Samuel... It's one of the few films that... Samuel L. Jackson's in it playing the octopus, who's a bad guy that you never see in the comic.
Just a pair of hands.
And gloves. That would never work on a film. So quite wisely, they just went, no, balls to it. We'll just show you Samuel L. Now, we all know that Samuel L. Jackson's mental, in terms of how he can portray
yes,
that character.
Which is
you
why know, I'm so disappointed by his name, really.
It's Jules in Pulp Fiction is the archetypal yeah. Samuel L. Jackson, that measured and calm, and then bang, the crazy's out. Samuel doesn't do that enough. And this is what the film, where he just gets to do that all the way through,
sure.
and it's mental. And I've watched it, and I love this film.
Mm-hmm.
I've inflicted it on a few people, and the general consensus at the end of it is, I watched it, but I don't know what to make of it.
Same
I
here.
Can't understand.
I've seen it 3 times now. I still don't know what I think about it. I still can't tell you whether I like or dislike that film. It does a strange thing to my head. I can't explain it. Which has since gone on to be called The Spirit Effect. Which is that thing that happens when you watch or listen or read some
experience
some kind of media, and at the end of it you go, I just don't know if I liked it or disliked it, but it engaged me in some way I can't explain.
So it's kind of done its job in some level.
Yeah.
So I mean, I genuinely love the film.
Yes. So there we go. So I think we've reached the
almost
no.
done. I'm gonna say
no.
I want. Two quick hits from
two
you.
Two quick hits.
Oh, sorry, there's two quick hits from you, then I'm going to chide you finally on the missing film.
I see.
So,
yes.
Cinematic high, best moment. Don't mean in a film, just what was the best thing about the 100 film challenge, because it was difficult.
Well, actually, it was, funnily enough, Café de Flore, which was a French-Canadian film, about which I knew absolutely nothing, because sometimes as part of the challenge, I would literally look... Occasionally, films aren't advertised and don't even have posters or trailers. So sometimes you look up and you just see a title. And all I had was the title. And it turned out to be one of the best films of the year. So best moment was going, and when you pick a random film based on nothing but the title on the board, I don't know if it's a comedy, a horror. I guess it might have subtitles. And that was it. And it was absolutely charming through it.
Okay. Low point.
Cosmopolis. All of it. Making the decision to see Cosmopolis was the low point, and many people walked out of Cosmopolis. Actually, many people walked out. It wasn't, when I say many, it was maybe well, okay, there were about 20 people at most in there, and I would say about half the audience were left at the end. And two pricks got up at the end, looked around, and saw people missing, started derisively.
Well, what did people expect from a David Cronenberg film?
And I wanted to leap across my table and punch them and say, we expected the David Cronenberg who did The Fucking Fly and made entertaining films. But I didn't. I just sat there and thought bad things about them. Even though I shouldn't, because you're entitled to say your own opinion on the cinema, he adds quickly.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Everyone's entitled to their opinion, but objectively some opinions are wrong.
Okay, right.
So,
and you're going to chide me for something that's
yes,
not on here.
My film of the year.
Yes.
Now, it's a film of a much beloved character.
What would that be, Andy?
He would be the lawman of the future.
Are you talking about the film Dread 3D?
Yes.
Right. Yes, yeah, I didn't go and see that.
Yeah. Yeah. Just to tie it back, and that was the third of the films I saw.
Yeah.
Now, we've talked about this before on the podcast, because I still love, and even after having watched Dread Done Right, I still enjoy the Stallone film.
I can't. I just can't. But no, I can't.
Dread 3D, because it's 3D and Ralph hates 3D.
Yep.
I hate it as well, but I broke my 3D.
I would point out there are many films here which were pushed as 3D, but they had 2D showings I could see. But Dread, unfortunately, only had 3D showings in Edinburgh, the capital city of Scotland. Therefore, I didn't bother with it. And to be honest, the trailer looked shite anyway. It doesn't look like a knockoff of The Raid. And yes, I know The Raid came out first, but I had gone by the trailer of Dread. And again, the trailer, not the film, because the film could be different. Yep. The unfortunate thing about the Dread trailer, which I think is perhaps one of the reasons why it didn't do well, is that if you'd seen The Raid and watched the Dread trailer, it looked like it had exactly the same plot points, no less, shot in a similar style and a similar looking building. So, to be honest, I wasn't, when I found out that there were no 2D, I actually wasn't that bothered, because it wasn't really a film I wanted to see anyway. So, sorry. I've enjoyed Dread and comics on and off since I was a lad.
Well, we will on a future Stardom podcast,
yeah, yeah,
watch Dread on Blu-ray for I Will Require It when it comes out.
I think if I'd seen the trailer for Dread 3D and thought, wow, that looks brilliant, I can't wait to see this, or I was really jazzed for it, and then there wasn't 2D showings, I think I would have been annoyed, but to be honest, I just didn't get a toss. I just went and saw something else instead.
We'll be watching that for a future podcast, because I enjoyed it all the way through. Okay, it's not 3D print though, you watch it normally.
No, but I just don't care.
I knew you'd say that.
Fuck's sake. I think that's the point. I think that's where we should end. Let's end now, but over an hour, we need to stop.
That's true.
Goodbye.
Farewell, we'll be back with normal service resuming.
Yes.
We still have
more Cuddly Colin Doctor Who episodes to get through.
And also just other things to talk about.
And at some point, we might watch Spawn.
Perhaps. And what special occasion could...
I can't think of any special occasion which would be appropriate for Spawn. I'll have to think about that very, very hard indeed, Andy.
It's a
puzzle, to be sure. I'm scratching my beard as I talk.
Likewise, am I?
Indeed.
I'm scratching my own, not Ralph's beard. That would be wrong.
Goodbye.
Farewell.